It's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It's been cold there, but even more than cold, it's been windy, so it's been rearranging that big snow that we got this last week and moving it around. People shoveled off their driveways, and then the wind blew these big banks of snow up against the front door, which, thank goodness, we don't use, but it's a nuisance. Anyway, nobody is thinking about spring. People are just getting pale and weak. Old men sitting there in the sidetrack tap can barely lift a glass of brandy up to their lips. Old men sitting out in the fishing shacks out on the ice, sitting there with a line down through a hole. If any considerable fish were to grab hold of that line, they could pull those feeble old men down through that hole, which would strip the clothes right off them, and they would be down on the bottom, they would drown, and they'd be eaten by turtles. But man's got to do what a man's got to do. Only exercise is shoveling, and for people my age, in my age group, what I think of as the pre-millennials, the after 40 generation, other people think of us as the blood-sucking pensioner generation. For people my age, we have grandchildren who do our shoveling for us, and so we get very, very, very little exercise. The only exercise I get really is when I am asked to unscrew a lid off a jar of pickles, and that doesn't happen all that often. I used to get exercise reaching down big reference books off a high shelf, but now I just, of course, look these things up on Google, and in 1/2 second, you get 462,000 results, not necessarily arranged in the most reliable order, but it's what we have. There's no heavy lifting involved, and we are grateful for this. It was Ash Wednesday. On Wednesday, of course, people came to church to have Pastor Liz or Father Wilmer mark their foreheads with ash. Dust art thou, and unto dust thou shalt return. Father Wilmer was feeling very sick with the flu, and so he was wondering if maybe as he put the ashes on, he was also administering flu as well. Dust art thou, and now here's a little bit of nausea to go with it. Pastor Liz gave a sermon on the passage from the Gospel of Matthew in which Jesus cautioned his followers not to be ostentatious about their faith and not to pray, make a big show of prayer in public, which showed that the Lord was omniscient and he knew that Ted Cruz would be running for president. But Lent is here, and now we are asked to give up something in remembrance of Jesus' 40 days on the desert in which he took no food and he was thirsty and he was sorely, sorely tempted even though he was the Son of God. Somehow giving up coffee does not seem adequate for this. I am giving up going to Florida in March. But mainly it has to do with looking in your heart and trying to come to terms with yourself. Valentine's Day is Sunday, as you know, which is the anniversary of the Valentine's Day massacre in Minnesota, which was in 1936, which was how my mother met my father. My dad was a railway mail clerk, and he was sorting mail in the mail car, which is two cars behind the engine on the Empire Builder. He was on the run from St. Paul Union Depot out to the West Coast, and the train stopped in Fargo, and there was a big blizzard going on, and the Bugs Peterson gang decided to rob the train. These were Norwegian burglars, and so they did not wear masks. They wore carnation buttoniers, and they thought that if they were wearing flowers, nobody would ever guess that it was them. And my dad heard a gunshot, and he and the gang came in the door. They'd blown the lock off the door, and they had this beautiful, slender woman hostage who became my mother, and they had her by the wrist. She was on her way out to the West Coast to audition for a part in a movie, which eventually was taken by Ruby Keeler, who's a very distant relative. But anyway, the gang seized this big mail sack with U.S. Mint written on the side of it, and they headed up the ladder to the roof of the mail car as the train took off from Fargo. They ran along the top of the train holding my mother by the wrist. They had this sack which contained $2 million in 50s and hundreds, and they headed all the way back to the parlor car at the rear of the train, and my father was giving chase along the roof. The train was going 70 miles an hour, and the Bugs Peterson gang was prepared to jump into a snowbank when the wind just blew them off the roof of the train, and my dad caught hold of my mother by the wrist just as she was about to go over, and he caught her, and she hung there, and he ducked down as the train went through a low tunnel, the only tunnel in the state of North Dakota. And when he came out of the tunnel, he had lifted her up and into his arms, and it would have been very easy for the two of them to go away and run away with the $2 million in that sack. But no, they turned it in when the train got into Jamestown, and they got a reward of $35.75, which was enough for a marriage license and a hotel room. And so here I am, and that's how I came to be here. It's a romantic story, and I loved it growing up because I was not a romantic kid myself, and how could I be? I was in the eighth grade when I finally discovered girls. I was 6 feet tall, and I weighed 145 pounds, and I wore these wire-rimmed glasses, and I had a habit of squinting to push the glasses up on my nose. A terrible, terrible habit. It makes you look freakish. And I wore clothes that had been handed down from my much older brother, clothes that were chosen for durability, not for style, and which smelled of mothballs. And I came from a family without much money. We had no money for things like cologne or even deodorant. I splashed liniment on myself every day, but it was not the same thing, is it? No, it's not. Valentine's Day back in grade school was a day when you came with valentines for everybody in your class. Everybody you were to give a valentine to. So you came with a bag of 31 valentines. You know, won't you be my valentine? That was the rule. And if you didn't, then you were sent home. You even gave valentines to the other boys in the class, which was how same-sex marriage came about. you know, Larry got a valentine from Jimmy, and they were confused. We were all confused. And before they knew it, you know, they had a house and a 30-year mortgage and furniture and a bunch of stainless steel serving trays. And I wanted girls to like me, but I didn't want it to go beyond that, which it so easily can. You know, you give a girl a valentine, and then a week or 2 weeks go by, and then she calls you up. And she says, "Where are you? Where are you? You asked me to be yours, and then you just disappear? How can you treat me this way? I'm crushed. I've never been. How can you treat another human being like this? You say, 'Be mine,' and then you just disappear." And so a couple months later, without really intending this, you're wearing a tuxedo, and you're in the church basement, and you're opening up gifts in silver wrapping with silver ribbons. And there are a whole lot of relish dishes, and there are three or four toaster ovens and stainless steel serving trays. Maybe this was how Solomon got 1,000 wives. He was just a romantic guy, and he sent more valentines than he intended. I mean, you take a look at the Song of Solomon, and it's very florid, literally very florid. I mean, he writes, "Come, my beloved, you know, let us go forth into the fields, let us go into the vineyard," and so forth, and see the vines and the grape blossoms and so forth. I mean, the guy just wanted to go into his garden, but women took this as a metaphor, you know, and he just kept getting married 1,000 times. You know, he had 1,000 stainless steel serving trays. Solomon did, and he left us the Song of Solomon, the initials of which are S-O-S. Don't forget that. All right. Now you see a woman and you care about her. You see a woman and you, men have this, they think of themselves as rescuers. We do. And we see this woman and she seems unhappy or lonely and we want to rescue her. And this town is not worthy of her. We want to take her away. So we ride in on our white horse and she's got credit card debt and she has to live with her parents and she has a lousy job and so we lift her up onto the saddle and she gets up on the saddle behind us and she wraps her arms around our great powerful chest and we ride galloping down the road and our long blonde curls flowing behind us in the wind and she's sort of sighing in our ear and then one thing just leads to another and before you know it, you've got a lot of relish dishes and you've got this 30-year mortgage and she looks at you and she says, you know, those socks don't go with that shirt at all. You get children out of the deal, and that's good. You get children because you need children to set up your computer and to and to open up your child-proof, medicine bottles and to figure out how to get Netflix, you know, on your TV. And so you get a nice life. I'm not complaining about this at all. And you do love each other. I mean, you drive each other crazy, but you do love each other. You love each other. It's the horse that I miss, actually. That beautiful white horse. Whatever happened to White Blaze? You know, you have kids and a horse is not practical anymore. You got to get a van. But I miss the horse, you know, riding through town, beautiful moonlit night, and you're just riding along and I don't know. I'm not complaining. I'm just thinking out loud. Anyway, that's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, all the children are above average.